Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for July 7th, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to preview week two at Wimbledon. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to check them out for the upcoming US Open packages. Parsa, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well. How's it going?
Going really well, you know, middle of summer. Second week of Wimbledon coming up, biggest day of the year in the tennis calendar on Monday. All 16 men and women. Nick Kyrgios made sure of that today by losing in straight sets to Nishikori. Otherwise, could have been some trouble for Monday. And now everybody's...
Don't worry, fans. He'll pick them for the U.S.
And then you know, we'll get to that in a second. But no, in all seriousness, Parsa, it's been a very... what's going on, right? Like, it's not good to be seeded basically this year at Wimbledon, right? It's like it's been all over the place, and it's a very interesting dynamic because especially on the women's side, I mean, Serena is still there, we'll get to that in a bit, but you don't see the continuity in the results that we would like. And we talked about this right before we jumped on air. It's really good to have new, fresh faces. You know, we've talked about this in previous podcasts. You've even said it. I'm looking for new blood, and I want to see, you know, these players come up. And that's great. But we still want to get behind people, like you said before we got on air. And on the women's side, a little bit tough to do that, right? Because you have Halep losing today. Muguruza, defending champion. Venus was out, even though she's been around for a while. And all of these seeded players. Kvitova, like, picked her to win. She's losing first round. It's just some unbelievable, right? And, you know, same with the men's side. We've got Cilic, you know, bowing out to, you know, Guido Pella. And, like, got up two sets to love, 4-1 in the breaker. They call it due to darkness. Comes back the next game, and he gets tuned. And then Pella loses straight sets to, who did he lose to? Mackenzie McDonald? Or who did, you know, in straight sets. You know what I mean? So it's like, what's going on, right? And it's tough. I mean, it's tough out there. And it just shows, bottom line, how great Nadal, Federer, and Serena are. Because whatever you want to say about them, oh, the fields are weak, the fields are strong, they've been around for too long, can't wait for them to leave, hopefully they play forever. Whatever angle you want to cover, doesn't really matter because they keep winning. And Serena right now is the odds-on favorite to win this tournament. And you know what, man? If don't look now, but we could be in store for Fidel. And it's who's going to say that that's not going to happen at this point, right? Federer's got a pretty cupcake draw. Nadal's is a little bit more difficult, but nevertheless, it is what it is. So, Parsa, just before we get into our pre-tournament picks, anything, even though there's been so many, you know, results that have made us shake our heads, is there anything that has really stood out to you so far in week one?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the seedings being out, it's not a good time to be seeded. I think that that's something interesting and different to look at. I think it attributes to the lack of understanding how to play on a grass court by everybody. And I think it's something that you really have to be comfortable with and comfortable doing. And we're not seeing that necessarily in all facets, in the women's game, the men's game, not necessarily playing the right tactics and first serve percentages dropping and not understanding certain specific moments. I think that contributes largely to the play. I mean, look at who's around and you see the veterans, the Serenas, you see Federer cruising through, you hear about, you know, Nadal is managing his way through it. Look at the familiar faces, Milos Raonic, you know, after kind of a not the best 2018, he's again finding himself deep into the Wimbledon tournament, into the second week. And I think, you know, those are the cast of characters that you are finding. So, you know, if we talk about the women's game and new faces, well, how many Wimbledons have they played? You know, has Halep ever been that successful? The real upset probably is Kvitova going out. You know, she certainly knows how to play on the grass. Muguruza, you know, is it surprising? Not really. This is kind of her MO.
Yes.
This is what she's always done. Sometimes she just doesn't play well.
Exactly.
She's most dangerous when she gets to a round of 16. You know that she's in it to win it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she's very vulnerable in the first few rounds, and she you know, the snake bit her this time. So that doesn't bother me so much. But, you know, you look at somebody like Serena, and she's gaining steam, and you got to watch out. You know, I'm most proud of Nima. I can't believe that my Kiki Bertens pick is still around. And it's a big match, me versus you. It's Pliskova Bertens to see who gets to the semi, and that's like, I'm sorry, to the quarter, and that's you know, we're struggling to have some women's semifinalist picks, so that's one of us that is going to be out.
Okay, you know, Parsa, in this podcast, we believe in accountability, right? So we got to stick with our picks, and I'm going to run these down for everybody right now. So on the women's side, Parsa had Kvitova, Muguruza, Bertens, and Serena. So you have two of the four left. Taylor Townsend as your dark horse. And then I had, who did I have? I had Kvitova, Muguruza, Pliskova, and Serena. Again, we're both 2-for-4, and I had Daniel Collins as my dark horse. So neither of our dark horses did much. And then on the men's side, Parsa, what did you have? You had Fed, Cilic, Djokovic, Nadal. You got three of the four, and I have Federer, Raonic, Kyrgios, and Delpo. You know, I got that soft spot for Kyrgios. I mean, the guy was just atrocious today. In the first set, he tanked it, basically tanked 6-1, 2-0, came back tied at 2. I mean, Pars, this guy's so talented that, you know, he set the record today. He won a service game, I don't know if you saw it, Pars, in 41 seconds, four straight aces. Every serve was over 135 miles an hour. You got to be good to be able to do that. I don't care if you're whoever you are, like, that's better than what Fed can do. Like, that's just next level stuff, and you saw it. But you know what? It's interesting because you know how you beat Kyrgios? You just got to get a serve back. If you can get a serve back and you're a consistent baseliner, and a guy like Nishikori is tough because he's close to the baseline and he's such a fast-footed player that he's just getting balls back, and then he's completely frustrating the Australian who likes to play short points, especially on a grass court. And then he was done. I mean, imagine Kyrgios against Nishikori on a clay court. I mean, that's going to be 6-1, 6-1, right? So that's really what it comes down to. Really disappointed in Kyrgios. Hopefully he can rebound. I don't know what he's thinking, but he's out. So I got three of the four. You also have three of the four. And so now, as we say that, let's get into what we think is going to transpire as the week goes on. Let's get into the women's first. We have, you know, the likes.
And Nima, my dark horse was okay on the men's.
Yes, TFO.
He
lost a hatchet off today.
TFO.
And I love TFO, man. I think he's great for the game on so many different levels, and I would have loved to have seen him. I had Tomic, Tomic took out a lot of my guys. Took out Kyrgios. He took out the two Australians. Sorry, Nishikori did. And, made second round or whatever. Yeah, second round. So he was okay, and he had some chances against Nishikori. I thought that was a decent dark horse pick because he's coming out of nowhere with no expectations, but he's a good grass quarter. Former quarterfinalist here. But Parsa, let's get into the women's draw. So we have the likes of Sivakova, Ostapenko, who's looking dangerously good. I think watch out for her, man. No fear. That's what I really like about Ostapenko. I mean, she comes into these draws, she's like, so what? I don't care. Come see, let me show me what you got. You know what I mean? I'm just going to go right through you. And I think from a coaching standpoint, I think we would really like to coach somebody like this because she's going to do what it takes. She's not scared. She's ready for the big stage. And she's improved her serve a little bit. So I think, she's going to be ready to go. And she said, I don't know if you heard this part. So she said, grass is my favorite surface. And she's
insane.
And she's a Wimbledon, and she's a French Open champion. So, and then we have Kazakina, we have Kerber, Bencic, Pliskova, Bertens, Georges, you know, Vekic, Serena, Rodina, Georgie, and Makarova, who, I think she's going to try to have something to prove here because Wozniacki said she's going to be really surprised if she wins her next match after she beat her in the second round. So a little bit of sour grapes by the Dane. But nevertheless, Makarova prevails. Very winnable against Georgie, who hits the crap out of the ball. And then, you know, Serena looks like the overwhelming favorite to come out of this, you know, this, I don't know, quarter, this semi. I don't know who's really going to stop her. Maybe Pliskova.
Based solely on history, right?
Yes. And so what do you got? I mean, obviously, because we're not looking, we're both out basically on the top halves of both of our picks. I mean, who are you going with now? What do you see transpiring here? I mean, can Kerber do some damage? Bencic is a very talented player. I would maybe even favor Bencic there. Very, you know, that's a great win by Kerber, man, to take out Osaka, because Osaka was looking very good here. Another very fearless player, and you know, she's ready to take out anybody. I mean, I think if Pliskova can keep her head together and, you know, not worry too much about the movement and the rallies, if she can keep it short and sweet, she's definitely got a chance to do some damage here and move forward. But, I mean, if you look at the top half here,
top half is, you know, has got, the name is Kerber and Ostapenko. I mean, those are the two that if they were in the semi, you wouldn't be surprised.
Yes.
You know, they're both Grand Slam champions of the past, and there aren't that many left in the draw. So you can't be shy about that. And obviously, Serena Williams draws a massive amount of attention. And Pliskova also you know, has that kind of game, but the movement will hurt her. So the minute someone can handle her serve and can return it back into play, I think she'll break herself out of the match. I think Burns has got a good shot against her because she will be able to counter her pace and move around the court. And I think that's where Pliskova is going to have a lot of problems. With Kerber, you know, I think Kerber has that ability to hold the baseline, and I think she can redirect shots as well. And I think that's the overriding theme, is that that's what you're getting with players. Now, if it's a Kerber Ostapenko, I don't think Kerber gets through Ostapenko.
Mm-hmm.
But it all depends on Sasnovich, who I've never seen play before, and how she does. I know that Sibulkova, for example, if Ostapenko wins, Sibulkova hits the ball hard and flat, that's what's going to give Ostapenko a lot of problems. So yeah, she loves it because she's playing people who hit a little bit slower, and she can just take massive windups and gets huge value for her shots. She's not going to get that value against somebody who really hits that ball real big and puts her on her back foot. So I think that's when you see the errors spray. But I think overall you have to go to the best servers. And I think the two best servers remaining are Serena Williams and Pliskova. I think those are your two overwhelming favorites. And because of attitude, pedigree, I think it's Serena Williams holding this title, which is crazy.
You know, I'm going to match you with the Serena, because I just feel that if she's healthy, man, she's probably licking her chops right now. And she has something actually very interesting today. A reporter asked her, how does it feel to have to play your best every day because everybody brings their best against you because of, you know, who you are? And it doesn't matter if you're coming back from pregnancy or injury or illness or, you know, ranking dropped, whatever it is. And she said, well, that's what's made me who I am, right? Because every day I have to play somebody who's playing their best. So it's not like they're tanking against me because they want to beat me, right? So that's what's made me what I am. And that's a very good point. And I mean, you know, Federer kind of said the same thing. It's like, my backhand was weak. Everybody started hitting to it, and now it's good. So it's like, kind of, it really does make sense. I think I'm going to go with Serena to match you. But I think something funky is going to happen at the top half, man, because that's what we've been seeing. I don't know. I mean, Sibulkova might make the finals at this point, just because she's going to be sturdy from the baseline. And she's going to get
pissed off that Serena took her seating.
Yeah. And then how funny would it be if they met in the finals? And it would be a decent match. It would, I think that it would be straights, maybe like a 4-4, 3-4, something like that. But, you know, Serena goes to that next level with her serve. She can just overpower Sibulkova. I don't care what she can do off the ground. If she can't get Serena's serve back, she's going to be toast. So do I go with that? I think Ostapenko is also a safe pick because she plays very fearless. And I mean, if the ball is in her pocket, kind of like a John Michael Gamble from back in the day, I mean, she's ripping the ball. Ripping the cover off of everything, and I don't know. I mean, I think I'm going to go with Ostapenko, Even though I had Pliskova, I think I'm gonna. Do I change it? Because I don't think I had Pliskova going to the finals. I think I had Kvitova taking out Pliskova. So I'm gonna stick with that. I'm gonna go with Ostapenko, Serena, and then I'm gonna go Serena. I think Ostapenko can give her a little bit more problems. Something, maybe even a three-setter, like a 6-4, 3-6, 6-4 Serena. And that's what I'm gonna be going with.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Serena Williams and Kerber in the final.
Okay.
I think Kerber's going to be able to move the ball and manipulate it around the court enough. And then I think you'll get a decent first set. Like, it'll be like a 6-4, 6-1 for Serena Williams. Start counting him. Championships.
Yeah, what is it going to be? 24 after this one, right?
Yep. So I think it's just insane. I can't even count that high anymore.
All right, so as we shift gears to the men's side, we have good old Roger Federer in his Uniqlo gear coming in $300-400 million richer, facing my boy Adrian Mannarino, who once again
bank account with just lots of zeros.
Lots
there.
Of zeros, man. Does that like when you open up your app, Parsa? You know what I mean? Like you could, you know, the apps, and you have like the fingerprint reading. Like, what does it say? Does it say like 800 million? Like, what happens with that? You know what I'm saying?
I think you get very excited every time you open up. You're like, oh man!
Like I try not to open up mine because it's a little bit depressing.
About, whether he should go buy that those pair of shoes and he has to think about it and sort of budget for it. I think he just does it.
Yeah, he's not.
He clicks that Amazon button, and it comes right.
Yeah. Or he's got the guy who picks it for him, and then he transfers him some funding for his salary. So we got him against my boy Adrian Mannarino, who's in the fourth round for the second year in a row. Nice to see. We got another Frenchman, Guillaume Moffi, who's trying to prove Marion Bartoli wrong and saying that he's a complete waste of time and space by wasting his career against Kevin Anderson, who's got a monster serve on him. Then we have Mackenzie McDonald. I don't like calling him Mackie McDonald. I don't know why everybody does that, but I'm going to go with Mackenzie. I think it's a cooler name. Against Raonic, who looked good today against Novak. And then we have Isner against Tsitsipas, young Greek player who's coming up nice, loves diving all around the court like Boris Becker. We have Khachanov, who beat your boy TFO today, against Djokovic, who's looking all fired up and pumping his chest. I think he was ready to rip off his shirt, but he's like, it's only the third round. I won in straights. In four over Carl Edmund. I'm not going to get too crazy. Then we got Nishikori, who destroyed Kyrgios today against Parsa. Ernest Gulbis. Where has this guy been? Right?
I don't know. Every 4 years he makes an appearance.
Yeah. I think, 4 years ago he made the French semis? Who knows, man? Like,
you never know with that guy. He just decides that he just wants to show up.
I think he can definitely beat Nishikori. I mean, he can overpower Nishikori, and he's going to take this super seriously. I mean, Nishikori, is he the favorite? Yes, but by a substantial amount, I wouldn't say so. And then, even against Djokovic and Khachanov, I mean, that's a winnable match for him, because remember, this guy grew up with Djokovic at Nicky Pilic's academy and stuff like that. And even back then, he said, listen, I'm more talented than this guy. He just works harder than I do. So he knows Djokovic from super back in the day with the Safin and all of that stuff. Even Safin was there at the tail end of his career, and he's a bit older than these guys. But then we got Del Potro against Gilles Simon. That's going to be, I think, a one-way traffic for Delpo going straight to the semis. And then you've been talking about Rafa, and, he's got Vesely, who's, again, Parsa, I've been thinking about Vesely a lot this year. And I'm like, where has this guy been? Super big, strong guy, lefty, absolutely hammers the ball, and he's been very, but he's kind of picked it up in the last couple weeks. If you're one of those diehard fans and you're watching the warm-up events, he's won a few matches, and lo and behold, he's in the fourth round playing Nadal, and I think this is going to be a good one. I still think Nadal gets through in straights, but that Delpo Nadal match could be five sets, and I think if and these are two guys for me that don't give a about the shot clock that's coming up at the U.S. Open. They're going to be ready to go, and it's going to be, I think, a five-set match over 4 hours. I think it's going to be the best match of the tournament unless we get Nadal and Federer. I'm sticking with Del Potro to get through this and make the semis. But, we'll see what happens. I mean, so, you know, give me a little bit of an overview as to what you think, and then we'll give our picks and then move forward from here.
Yeah, I mean, I love the men's draw here. I think it's super exciting, even though Chilich is out, who I picked to win because I thought he would win it, but I'm not sad that he's gone, other than my ego being bruised a little bit. Yes. But other than that, I actually don't like watching him play. So, you know, who's left is exciting to me. You know, Federer I like, Manarino I like, Monfils I like, Mackie McDonald I like, Milos I don't really like, but Tsitsipas I really like, Djokovic I like, Nishikori I like, Golbis, you never know, Del Potro I like watching, Simone I like watching, and Nadal I like watching. So there's quite a bit of entertainment ahead in the next week, which I like. You know, I'm always looking for the name to come through, so I'm very curious to see how Tsitsipas does against Isner, and obviously his return isn't as strong, but he's going to hold against Isner. So I wonder if he can get him into a pickle in the tiebreak. If he can figure out how to get a few chips in and make John play a couple extra shots, I'd be curious to see how that one plays out. You know, it looks like Djokovic is rounding back into form. I think that there's some sort of edge that is returning, but don't be surprised if some bad habits rear its ugly head. You know, they're just getting fewer and far between. I think that's what we're starting to see, but I don't know if it's going to be gone for good just like that, like a switch. I expected it to be gone like a switch when he first started to come back. You know, after a few matches, he should be back to Djokovic, but that hasn't happened. So it looks like he's slowly climbing the ladder. And if that's the case, then don't be surprised if he throws in a dud. You know, with Nadal, I think Nadal is you know, besides Federer, I think is the player of the tournament. He's looking very good, very strong, very tactically perfect. Moving the serve around the box, it becomes very difficult to play him, and he just keeps so many balls in play. Even on your best shots, he's putting balls back in play. I wouldn't be surprised if it is a Fadal. I mean, I think how apropos in the 10-year anniversary of Lee match, that it happens all over again.
That'll be something, huh?
Why not? A Fadal final, right? Did you get a chance to watch that Strokes of Genius on the Tennis Channel by any chance?
I have not, no. We don't have Tennis Channel in Canada. That's the problem. So, but I'm going to have to find it somewhere and then
and I haven't seen it either, but all I've heard is raving reviews about the documentary. I heard it's amazing. So definitely worth the watch for all our viewers out there or listeners out there. And I'm not sure how to get it, but if you're a tennis fan, it sounds like that's a documentary you definitely want to watch. And especially before the final, if it is a Fadal, you're definitely going to want to get your hands on that and watch that beforehand to really appreciate what these guys are about, what they've done. And what they continue to do.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that being said, you know, I had it as a Chilich, I think, Nadal final. Mm. No, Chilich Djokovic final. That's what I had.
Yeah. Changing your mind or what?
I mean, I can't, but I'll say that Federer will beat Chilich in the semi because Chilich isn't there. So it'll be a Federer Djokovic final.
Really? Hey, wow.
I don't know. I don't know if Djokovic can beat Nadal, but yeah, let's go Federer Djokovic just because I had Djokovic in the final to begin with, so I can't change that. I do think he's a strong horse. I don't know if he's the second horse, but maybe it'll work out like I saw it. So I have to stick with Djokovic, and if it's Federer Djokovic, I mean, he's not beating Federer yet. He's not ready for it. I'll go with Federer in four.
Okay. So I'm going to go with Federer getting through comfortably. I think Milos meets him in the semis. From that point, I think might go to four. I think Milos can maybe squeeze out a set playing, you know, redlining his serve, just hitting like 130 mile an hour second serves as he should be. Then in the bottom half, Nadal's definitely got a much tougher road. I think he gets through Vesely straights. Del Potro, I think, takes out Nadal, actually, there in five. And then I think it's going to be Djokovic and I think it's going to be Djokovic Del Potro. I think Del Potro wins that match as well. Just going to be very methodical again encounter. I just think Del Potro might be able to overpower him a little bit. And I don't think Djokovic's defense is where it was, even though he's getting really, really close. I think on the hard courts, he will be able to rekindle that and be a real, real force at the U.S. Open. But I'm going to go with the Federer-Del Potro final, and I'm going to go with Federer in five sets over Del Potro to win his 21st Grand Slam title. Might be his last, too. I don't know for sure, but that's what I'm going with. Parsa, as we finish up here, we've got two more points we've got to cover. We're going to get to some gear talk quickly here. So we had Roger Federer changing, very surprisingly to a lot of people. I mean, I had reported it, I believe, on June 12th, that Federer, because I talked to some really close friends that I have at Night Court and some former employees as well, too, that Federer was going to be leaving for sure and to go to Uniqlo. Numbers were just too far apart. He signed. Hypebeast has reported that he's got a $300 million to $410 million contract with Uniqlo, only for apparel. They're going to use him as a global brand ambassador, really pump him up for the Tokyo Olympics and all that stuff, give him some cool collab gear and stuff like that he'll be wearing. No shoes, so Nike might jump in. I know Adidas is also very interested. Asics is also very interested. I don't know if they can match it. Probably going to be asking for anywhere from $2 to $5 million a year, just because it's better. Usually that's about $1 million, like $500,000 to $1 million if you're a superstar, but Fed's a little bit above that moniker. But I'll tell you something, Parsa. My opinion, Federer will go back to Nike. And this is how it's going to play out. He's going to ride this wave with Uniqlo because it's the best deal anybody's ever got in the history of sports. Because, people get consumed with these lifetime deals, right? Like LeBron has a lifetime deal. Federer has a lifetime Wilson deal. Lifetime deal doesn't mean until they're alive. You know what I'm saying? Until they die. It means as long as they're an active player. So LeBron James, once he's done with Nike, his contract will change. He's still going to get the gear. They still might give him some money. Jordan's different. He's got his own brand. He's an anomaly. He's got a different, whole resume. But a guy like Federer, once he retires, Wilson's not paying him $2 million a year. They're going to, obviously, they might retro some stuff, keep him around because he's Federer. He's the greatest player, men's player of all time. But it's not that they're going to pay him the same salary. And it's just, but Uniqlo has so much, I don't know what word to use that's, correct on his podcast, but they got a lot of, to say, listen, man, we're going to back you. Even if you're sitting on the beach in Cabo, you're going to get $30 to $40 million a year from us. You got to do a couple photo shoots, maybe come to Japan, do a meet and greet, $40 million, boom. And then that's just, you can't beat that, man. And now he's got the opportunity to wear patches on his clothes. But this is what I think is going to happen. He's going to ride this wave out, become an even richer man by the time he's 47 years old. At that time, because he's had this 20-year history with Nike, he goes back to Nike a la Agassi, where he had Nike, went to Adidas because they were going to help him out more with his charities and whatnot. And now he's back with Nike and he's retroing the Air Tech challenges and all of that jazz. And he's just feeling really good and he's back to where he wants to be. Sampras kind of had that hiccup where he was with Nike, then he was wearing nothing, and then now he's with Nike. And, they're doing kind of the same thing with him, but he doesn't really have the same streetwear presence that an Agassi has. And Federer's gonna have that. He's gonna come back, and then you're gonna see the next Shapovalov in 10 years. Shapo will be close to 30. There'll be another new 18-17 year old kid. They're probably gonna make him more an RF shirt, the legend of Federer and all this line, and they'll create a whole story and retro the Vapors and all of that stuff that they're gonna do. And so it's gonna be really cool to see that happen. And you just gotta just give a clap for Federer, man, because, Tony Gostek and his team have absolutely hit a home run with this one, in my opinion. And people are like, oh, it devalues his brand, and, Nike's the pantheon of sportswear, and it is. But you got $30 million from Nike, $300 million from Uniqlo. I'm going with Uniqlo, man. It's not because I'm a sellout. I love Nike, but I'm 100% going with Uniqlo. And that's where the story ends. And I think that it's going to be interesting.
That's what they're banking on, Ima.
Of course. And you know what I'm saying? And I already see, Federer's wearing this, the jumpsuit, the Uniqlo. And it's like, everybody's like, that's such a sick jacket. It's a sick jacket because Federer's wearing it. And I'm not going to name the other Uniqlo guys, but I didn't see people saying that when the other guys were wearing it. and still are. You know what I'm saying? We're not pointing any fingers at anybody. But it's because it's Federer. You know what I mean? And obviously, when you have a player of that stature who's winning and he's got that persona, everything looks cool. It's just that's the way it goes, right? So it'll be interesting to see how that transpires.
And also his week in New York leading up to it should be real interesting.
Yeah, for sure. The Soho store is gonna be bumping 100%. He's gonna be there doing a meet and greet, and it's just gonna be bonkers there. No doubt about that. That store is massive. I've been there on a few occasions. It's gonna be lit, and so it's gonna be interesting to see how that goes down. And as we move forward, Parsons, our last topic here is, as we all know, that starting in January at the Australian Open, they're going to move from 32 seats to 16. ITF has decided this, and you know they work with the ATP and WTA, so they're going to skim it down. I think it can't come soon enough, to be honest with you, because we've seen, like, what did I say, Parsons? There's only 9 of 16 seeds on the men's side, right, in the Sweet 16, and 7 of 16 on the women's. So, you know what I mean? Like, if it's going to be, you know, Kyrgios versus Federer first round, let it be that way. Because imagine how great that is. You know, you always want to, it's like an article, right, Parsa? What do you remember about an article? You remember the beginning, and you remember the end. You don't really remember the middle, right? You got Arthur Ashe, first round, Kyrgios, Federer. People are going to be excited about that, man. That's going to be crazy. But if you have Federer versus, I don't know, Lukas Lachko, with all due respect to him, yeah, it's Federer, but people are not going as crazy, right? Then you might miss a Federer and Kyrgios quarterfinal, semifinal, but that's pending that, as we know, Kyrgios getting there. You know, he's going to come out, give you a show in the first round. You know, you could have Fognini versus Nadal. These type of things, I think, are good to happen earlier in event too, because the cream will rise to the top. It's not like you're going to get Murray versus Federer first round.
Yeah, so but the contrarian point of view, the reason they went to 32 is because they were getting lower quality. Some round of 16s were super easy compared to,
sure,
you know, other round of 16s, okay, or quarterfinals, and you get these sleepers in, and sleepers are great for the diehards like you and me, and for the people listening to the podcast who are all diehards. But it doesn't necessarily bring the buzz or the star value that you'd like at a quarterfinal night session U.S. Open. You know, you could get, Khachanov versus Federer quarterfinal in the U.S. Open with only 16 seats. You know, so it's very possible that a draw works out that way. Whereas if you have a 32 seed and someone gets hurt or someone gets upset, you have probably a top 30 player. Although it didn't happen at Wimbledon, but Wimbledon's a little bit of an asterisk for me. You have to know how to play on grass. It's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a majority of people know how to play on clay, and a majority of people know how to play on the hard courts. And I think grass, though, is a unique surface, and not a lot of people spend time on it, you know, which we didn't give a shout-out to Sloane Stephens, by the way, who decided on Friday before the Wimbledon to get on a grass court and practice and lost, consequently, Monday, winning 4 games, you know, as a defending French Open champion, which I think is ludicrous. But that being said, that's clearly someone who doesn't know how to play on grass. And I think there are players like that, and a lot of them that exist. So I think there's some sort of, you know, it remains to be seen, but I think the tour goes through these kinds of changes all the time. And then there's a whole group that'll say, oh, you know, 16 seeds is better. We would get better early round matchups. And then all of a sudden, after a few slams, you realize, oh, shoot, you know, like, now there's 2 of the 4 quarterfinal matches are garbage. You know, I don't even want to watch it. And then what happens? You know, when you only have, let's say, 2 people on in a session, or 2 matches in a session, and one of them is garbage, people start to think, like, well, you know, why am I paying this money? Why, you know, it becomes a little bit more challenging. Okay. So it remains to be seen. As long as if the depth is there, if there are legitimately 40 players that are deserving and can contend with, if world number 40 can beat Federer on any given day, then yes, perhaps that's a good idea. But I don't think that's the case yet. You know, maybe in the women's tour, it is the case.
For sure.
The 40th player can beat the first one, but I'm not quite sure about the men's side.
Okay. But then it ultimately comes down to then why did they decide to do it, right? There has to be, you know what I mean?
I think because they're bored, you know, they need to do something. Because that's a good point. Enough people are complaining, you know, so they try to change it up. But then I'm telling you, watching 4 years or so, 5 years, it's going to go back. It's no offense to the USTA and the junior system here in the United States. I mean, it's crazy. They keep changing. I can't even follow it anymore. That's how much they change it. Mm-hmm. And I'm in this business. Mm-hmm. It's just never ending level 3 tournament, level 2 tournament. Is now we have 64 seeds, and then then it's 16 seeds. Then we have a qualifying where Riley Opelka is in the qualifying of our national tournament, and then 2 years later he's top 100 ATP. Like, why is he in the qualifying of a 128 boys United States tennis tournament, junior tennis tournament? And it makes no sense. So there's a lot of that boredom that goes around, and people, you know, searching for something better. And I don't know if playing around with things that you know sort of work for a majority of the time are necessarily the best options. You know, does the shot clock that you know, coming up at the US Open, does it really bother you if Nadal takes 26 seconds instead of 24?
It's going to bother him. And we got
I know
some...
it's going to bother him, but does it bother you as someone who's watching?
Absolutely not. But there's something also to be said about, you know, the culture that we live in now that has a very low attention span, and they're just looking for bang bang Kyrgios stuff. You know, like Federer, these guys
it's
play
also
very
terrible. And you get what you want to have, like a best of three set Grand Slams and super tiebreakers. I mean, I'm a
well, that's what Nadal talked about, right? Sure, and that's what Nadal talked about. He said, you know what, the most memorable matches are not matches that last under 2 hours. He goes, name me one. He goes, they're 4 or 5 hour matches. And he's obviously alluding to the more than dozen that he's played in his career.
Or look at that. I still remember the Kyrgios Federer in Miami a couple years back. An amazing match.
Amazing match. One of my favorites ever. That was awesome.
A best of three set match, but it was, what, 3 hours long?
Yeah. All tiebreakers. It was incredible. Yeah, so we'll see how that goes down. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I think it's good to tinker with these things. Obviously, technology is such a big part of everybody's life now that they're going to bring the shot clocks and they're going to get rid of lines people and everything. I mean, there's going to be robots picking up tennis balls soon, and you know, it's going to be virtual reality. We don't even need to go anywhere. We just put on some glasses, and I can see what's going on at the U.S. Open Court 18, and it's like from my bedroom or whatever, your dining room, and it's like... I don't know. Who knows what the future brings, but we can only go with what we know so far. So that's pretty much it. Okay, so that will that's going to be it for Parsa and I this week. We'll be back next Sunday to review the fortnight. Obviously, we have a day of rest tomorrow to give the grass a little bit of breathing time. That's why they do it. So they give 24 hours so it doesn't break down as much as it's going to obviously do because of all the baseline play. And then we'll be back to wrap it up next Sunday and see how we did with our picks. In the meantime, you can catch Parsa on Twitter and Instagram at Parsa Sammy. You can catch myself at Tennis Connected. You can also catch all the daily reviews, schedules of play, previews on tennisconnected.com. You can also follow us on Instagram. Download this podcast on iTunes. Finally, Parsa, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody out there for listening. Make sure to also hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs, as well as check them out for the Stowe Mountain Classic, which will be a prelude to the U.S. Open. It's like a warm-up exhibition that I think PFO and Nishioka are already entered. We also have some other players, about 8 or 9 players. Make sure to hit that up the week right before the U.S. Open. And everybody else, once again, be good. Enjoy the tennis this week. Talk to you guys.